abjure his law and his judgment. Your words are too proud, said Mablung, though he pitied the young man. Learn wisdom. You shall not turn runagate. I bid you return with me as a friend, and there are other witnesses. When the king learns the truth, you may hope for his pardon. But Turin was weary of the elven halls, and he feared lest he be held captive, and he said to Mablung, I refuse your bidding. I will not seek King Thingol's pardon for nothing, and I will go now where his doom cannot find me. You have but two choices, to let me go free, or to slay me, if that would fit your law, for you are too few to take me alive. They saw by the fire in his eyes that this was true, and they let him pass. One death is enough, said Mablung. I did not will it, but I do not mourn it, said Turin. May Mandos judge him justly, and if ever he return to the lands of the living, may he prove wiser. Farewell. Fare free, said Mablung, for that is your wish. To say well would be vain if you go in this way. A shadow is over you. When we meet again, may it be no darker. To that Turin made no answer, but left them, and went swiftly away, alone, none knew whither. It is told that when Turin did not return to the north marches of Doriath, and no tidings could be heard of him, Beleg Strongbow came himself to Menegroth to seek him, and with heavy heart he gathered news of Turin's deeds and flight. Soon afterwards, Thingol and Melian came back to their halls, for the summer was waning, and when the king heard report of what had passed, he said, This is a grievous matter, which I must hear in full. Though Cyrus my counsellor is slain, and Turin my foster son has fled, tomorrow I will sit in the seat of judgment, and hear again all in due order, before I speak my doom. Next day the king sat upon his throne in his court, and about him were all the chiefs and elders of Doriath. Then many witnesses were heard, and of these Mablung spoke most and clearest. And as he told of the quarrel at table, it seemed to the king that Mablung's heart leaned to Turin. You speak as a friend of Turin, son of Hurin, said Thingol. I was, but I have loved truth more and longer, Mablung answered. Hear me to the end, lord. When all was told, even to the parting words of Turin, Thingol sighed, and he looked on those that sat before him, and he said, Alas, I see a shadow on your faces. How has it stolen into my realm? Malice is at work here. Cyrus I accounted faithful and wise. But if he lived, he would feel my anger, for his taunting was evil, and I hold him to blame for all that chanced in the hall. So far, Turin has my pardon. But I cannot pass over his later deeds, when wrath should have cooled. The shaming of Cyrus and the hounding of him to his death were wrongs greater than the offence. They show a heart hard and proud. Then Thingol sat for a while in thought, and spoke sadly at last. This is an ungrateful foster son, and in truth a man too proud for his state. How can I still harbour one who scorns me and my law, or pardon one who will not repent? This must be my doom. I will banish Turin from Doriath. If he seeks entry, he shall be brought to judgment before me, and until he sues for pardon at my feet, he is my son no longer. If any here accounts this unjust, let him speak now. Then there was silence in the hall, and Thingol lifted up his hand to pronounce his doom. But at that moment Beleg entered in haste and cried, Lord, may I yet speak? You come late, said Thingol. "Were you not bidden with the others?" "Truly, lord," answered Beleg, "but I was delayed. I sought for one whom I knew. Now I bring at last a witness who should be heard ere your doom falls." "All were summoned who had aught to tell," said the king. "What can he tell now of more weight than those to whom I have listened?" "You shall judge when you have heard," said Beleg. "Grant this to me if I have ever deserved your grace." "To you I grant it," said Thingol. Then Beleg went out and led in by the hand the maiden Nellas, who dwelt in the woods and came never into Menegroth. And she was afraid, as much of the great pillared hall and the roof of stone, as of the company of many eyes that watched her. And when Thingol bade her speak, she said, "Lord, I was sitting in a tree." But then she faltered in awe of the king, and could say no more. At that the king smiled and said, "Others have done this also, but have felt no need to tell me of it." "Others indeed," said she, taking courage from his smile, "even Luthien, and of her I was thinking that morning, and of Beren the man." To that Thingol said nothing, and he smiled no longer, but waited until Nellas should speak again. "For Turin reminded me of Beren," she said at last. "They are akin, I am told, and their kinship can be seen by some that look close." Then Thingol grew impatient. "That may be," he said, "but Turin, son of Húrin, is gone in scorn of me, and you will see him no more to read his kindred. For now I will speak my judgment."
"Lord King," she cried then, "bear with me and let me speak first. I sat in a tree to look on Turin as he went away, and I saw Cyros come out from the wood with sword and shield and spring on Turin at unawares."
At that there was a murmur in the hall, and the king lifted his hand, saying, "You bring graver news to my ear than seemed likely. Take heed now to all that you say, for this is a court of doom."
"So Beleg has told me," she answered, "and only for that have I dared to come here, so that Turin shall not be ill-judged. He is valiant, but he is merciful. They fought, lord, these two, until Turin had bereft Cyros of both shield and sword, but he did not slay him. Therefore I do not believe that he willed his death in the end. If Cyros were put to shame, it was shame that he had earned."
"Judgment is mine," said Thingol, "but what you have told shall govern it." Then he questioned Nellas closely, and at last he turned to Mablung, saying, "It is strange to me that Turin said nothing of this to you." "Yet he did not," said Mablung, "or I should have recounted it, and otherwise should I have spoken to him at our parting." "And otherwise shall my doom now be," said Thingol. "Hear me. Such fault as can be found in Turin I now pardon, holding him wronged and provoked. And since it was indeed, as he said, one of my counsel who so misused him, he shall not seek for this pardon, but I will send it to him wherever he may be found, and I will recall him in honour to my halls." But when the doom was pronounced, suddenly Nellas wept.
"Where can he be found?" she said. "He has left our land, and the world is wide."
"He shall be sought," said Thingol. Then he rose, and Beleg led Nellas forth from Menegroth, and he said to her, "Do not weep, for if Turin lives or walks still abroad, I shall find him, though all others fail." On the next day Beleg came before Thingol and Melian, and the king said to him, "Counsel me, Beleg, for I am grieved. I took Húrin's son as my son, and so he shall remain, unless Húrin himself should return out of the shadows to claim his own. I would not have any say that Turin was driven forth unjustly into the wild, and gladly would I welcome him back, for I loved him well.
Give me leave, lord, said Beleg, and on your behalf I will redress this evil, if I can. For such manhood as he promised should not run to nothing in the wild. Doriath has need of him, and the need will grow more. And I love him also. Then Thingol said to Beleg, Now I have hope in the quest. Go with my good will, and if you find him, guard him and guide him as you may. Beleg Cuthalion, long have you been foremost in the defence of Doriath, and for many deeds of valour and wisdom have earned my thanks. Greatest of all, I shall hold the finding of Turin. At this parting, ask for any gift, and I will not deny it to you. I ask then for a sword of worth, said Beleg, for the orcs come now, too thick and close for a bow only, and such blade as I have is no match for their armour. Choose from all that I have, said Thingol, save only Aranruth, my own. Then Beleg chose Anglachel, and that was a sword of great fame, and it was so named because it was made of iron that fell from heaven as a blazing star. It would cleave all Earth-Dolven iron. One other sword only in Middle-earth was like to it. That sword does not enter into this tale, though it was made of the same ore by the same smith, and that smith was Eöl, the dark elf, who took Arethel Turgon's sister to wife. He gave Anglachel to Thingol as fee, which he begrudged, for leave to dwell in Nan Elmoth. But the other sword, Anguirel, its mate, he kept until it was stolen from him by Maeglin, his son. But as Thingol turned the hilt of Anglachel towards Beleg, Melian looked at the blade, and she said, There is malice in this sword. The heart of the smith still dwells in it, and that heart was dark. It will not love the hand that it serves, neither will it abide with you long. Nonetheless, I will wield it while I may, said Beleg, and thanking the king, he took the sword and departed. Far across Beleriand he sought in vain for tidings of Turin through many perils, and that winter passed away, and the spring after.
Chapter 6 Turin Among the Outlaws. Now the tale turns again to Turin. He, believing himself an outlaw whom the king would pursue, did not return to Beleg on the north marches of Doriath, but went away westward, and passing secretly out of the guarded realm, came into the woodlands south of Teiglin. There, before the Nirnaeth, many men had dwelt in scattered homesteads. They were of Haleth's folk for the most part, but owned no lord, and they lived both by hunting and husbandry, keeping swine in the marshed lands, and tilling clearings in the forest which were fenced from the wild. But most were now destroyed, or had fled into Brethil, and all that region lay under the fear of orcs and of outlaws. For in that time of ruin, houseless and desperate men went astray, remnants of battle and defeat, and lands laid waste, and some were men driven into the wild for evil deeds. They hunted and gathered such food as they could, but many took to robbery and became cruel when hunger or other need drove them. In winter they were most to be feared, like wolves. And Gaurwaith, wolfmen, they were called by those who still defended their homes. Some 60 of these men had joined in one band, wandering in the woods beyond the western marches of Doriath, and they were hated scarcely less than orcs, for there were among them outcasts, hard of heart, bearing a grudge against their own kind. The hardest of heart was one named Androg, who had been hunted from Dor Lomin for the slaying of a woman. And others also came from that land, old Algund, the oldest of the fellowship, who had fled from the Nirnaeth, and Forweg, as he named himself, a man with fair hair and unsteady, glittering eyes, big and bold, but far fallen from the ways of the Edain of the people of Hador. Yet he could still be wise and generous at times, and he was the captain of the fellowship. They had dwindled now to some 50 men by deaths in hardship or affrays, and they were becoming wary, and set scouts or a watch about them, whether moving or at rest. Thus they were soon aware of Turin when he strayed into their haunts. They trailed him, and they drew a ring about him, so that suddenly as he came out into a glade beside a stream, he found himself within a circle of men with bent bows and drawn swords. Then Turin halted, but he showed no fear. "Who are you?" he said. "I thought that only orcs waylaid men, but I see that I am mistaken." "You may rue the mistake," said Forweg, "for these are our haunts, and my men do not allow other men to walk in them. We take their lives as forfeit, unless they can ransom them." Then Turin laughed grimly. "You will get no ransom from me, an outcast and an outlaw. You may search me when I am dead, but it may cost you dearly to prove my words true. Many of you are likely to die first." Nonetheless, his death seemed near, for many arrows were notched to the string, waiting for the word of the captain. And though Turin wore elven mail under his great tunic and cloak, some would find a deadly mark. None of his enemies stood within reach of a leap with drawn sword. But suddenly Turin stooped, for he had espied some stones at the stream's edge before his feet. At that moment an outlaw, angered by his proud words, let fly a shaft aimed at his face, but it passed over him, and he sprang up again like a bowstring released, and cast a stone at the bowman with great force and true aim, and he fell to the ground with broken skull. "I might be of more service to you alive in the place of that luckless man," said Turin, and turning to Forweg he said, "If you are the captain here, you should not allow your men to shoot without command." "I do not," said Forweg, "but he has been rebuked swiftly enough. I will take you in his stead, if you will heed my words better." "I will," said Turin, "as long as you are captain, and in all that belongs to a captain. But the choice of a new man to a fellowship is not his alone, I judge. All voices should be heard. Are there any here who do not welcome me?" Then two of the outlaws cried out against him. One was a friend of the fallen man. Ulrad was his name. "A strange way to gain entry to a fellowship," he said, "the slaying of one of our best men." "Not unchallenged," said Turin, "but come then, I will endure you both together, with weapons or with strength alone. Then you shall see if I am fit to replace one of your best men. But if there are bows in this test, I must have one too." Then he strode towards them, but Ulrad gave back and would not fight. The other threw down his bow and walked up to meet Turin. This man was Androg of Dor Lomin. He stood before Turin and looked him up and down. "Nay," he said at length, shaking his head, "I am not a chicken heart, as men know, but I am not your match. There is none here, I think. You may join us for my part, but there is a strange light in your eyes. You are a dangerous man. What is your name?" "Nathan the Wronged, I call myself," said Turin. And Nathan he was afterwards called by the outlaws. But though he claimed to have suffered injustice, and to any who claimed the like, he ever lent too ready an ear, no more would he reveal concerning his life or his home. Yet they saw that he had fallen from high state, and that though he had nothing but his arms, those were made by elven smiths. He soon won their praise, for he was strong and valiant, and had more skill in the woods than they. And they trusted him, for he was not greedy, and took little thought for himself. But they feared him, because of his sudden angers, which they seldom understood. To Doriath Turin could not, or in pride, would not, return. To Nargothrond, since the fall of Felagund, none were admitted. To the lesser folk of Haleth in Brethil he did not deign to go, and to Dor Lomin he did not dare, for it was closely beset, and one man alone could not hope at that time, as he thought, to come through the passes of the Mountains of Shadow. Therefore Turin abode with the outlaws, since the company of any men made the hardship of the wild more easy to endure, and because he wished to live, and could not be ever at strife with them, he did little to restrain their evil deeds. Thus he soon became hardened to a mean and often cruel life, and yet at times pity and disgust would waken him, and then he was perilous in his anger. In this evil and dangerous way Turin lived to that year's end, and through the need and hunger of winter, until stirring came, and then a fair spring. Now in the woods of Teiglin, as has been told, there were still some homesteads of men, hardy and wary, though now few in number. Though they loved them not at all, and pitied them little, they would in bitter winter put out such food as they could well spare, where the gaur waith might find it. And so they hoped to avoid the bandit attack of the famished. But they earned less gratitude so from the outlaws than from beasts and birds, and they were saved rather by their dogs and their fences, for each homestead had great hedges about its cleared land, and about the houses was a ditch and a stockade, and there were paths from stead to stead, and men could summon help at need by horn calls. But when spring was come, it was perilous for the gaurwaith to linger so near to the houses of the woodmen, who might gather and hunt them down. And Turin wondered, therefore, that Forweg did not lead them away. There was more food and game and less peril away south, where no men remained. And one day Turin missed Forweg, and also Undrog, his friend, and he asked where they were, but his companions laughed. "Away on business of their own, I guess," said Ulrad. "They will be back before long, and then we shall move. In haste, maybe, for we shall be lucky if they do not bring the hive bees after them." The sun shone, and the young leaves were green, and Turin was irked by the squalid camp of the outlaws, and he wandered away alone far into the forest. Against his will he remembered the hidden kingdom, and he seemed to hear the names of the flowers of Doriath as echoes of an old tongue almost forgotten. But on a sudden he heard cries, and from a hazel thicket a young woman ran out. Her clothes were rent by thorns, and she was in great fear, and stumbling she fell gasping to the ground. Then Turin, springing towards the thicket with drawn sword, hewed down a man that burst from the hazels in pursuit, and he saw only in the very stroke that it was Forweg. but as he stood looking down in amaze at the blood upon the grass, Androg came out and halted also, astounded. "Evil work, Nathan!" he cried, and drew his sword. But Turin's mood ran cold, and he said to Androg, "Where are the orcs, then? Have you outrun them to help her?" "Orcs?" said Androg. "Fool! You call yourself an outlaw. Outlaws know no law but their needs. Look to your own, Nathan, and leave us to mind ours."
"I will do so," said Turin. "But today our paths have crossed. You will leave the woman to me, or you will join Forweg." Androg laughed.
"If that is the way of it, have your will," he said. "I make no claim to match you alone, but our fellows may take this slaying ill."
Then the woman rose to her feet and laid her hand on Turin's arm. She looked at the blood, and she looked at Turin, and there was delight in her eyes.
"Kill him, lord," she said. "Kill him, too, and then come with me. If you bring their heads, Larnach, my father, will not be displeased. For two wolf heads he has rewarded men well."
But Turin said to Androg, "Is it far to her home?"
"A mile or so," he answered.
"In a fenced homestead yonder. She was straying outside."
"Go then quickly," said Turin, turning back to the woman. "Tell your father to keep you better, but I will not cut off the heads of my fellows to buy his favour or aught else." Then he put up his sword.
"Come," he said to Androg, "we will return. But if you wish to bury your captain, you must do so yourself. Make haste, for a hue and cry may be raised. Bring his weapons."
The woman went off through the woods, and she looked back many times before the trees hid her. Then Turin went on his way without more words, and Androg watched him go, and he frowned, as one pondering a riddle.
When Turin came back to the camp of the outlaws, he found them restless and ill at ease, for they had stayed too long already in one place, near to homesteads well guarded, and they murmured against Forweg.
"He runs hazards to our cost," he said, "and others may have to pay for his pleasures."
"Then choose a new captain," said Turin, standing before them. "Forweg can lead you no longer, for he is dead."
"How do you know that?" said Ulrad. "Did you seek honey from the same hive? Did the bees sting him?"
"No," said Turin. "One sting was enough. I slew him, but I spared Androg, and he will soon return." Then he told all that was done, rebuking those that did such deeds. And while he yet spoke, Androg returned, bearing Forweg's weapons.
"See, Nathan," he cried, "no alarm has been raised. Maybe she hopes to meet with you again."
"If you jest with me," said Turin, "I shall regret that I grudged her your head. Now tell your tale, and be brief."
Then Androg told truly enough all that had befallen.
"What business Nathan had there, I now wonder," he said.
"Not ours, it seems. For when I came up, he had already slain Forweg."
"The woman liked that well, and offered to go with him, begging our heads as a bride price. But he did not want her, and sped her off.
So what grudge he had against the captain, I cannot guess. He left my head on my shoulders, for which I am grateful, though much puzzled."
"Then I deny your claim to come of the people of Hador," said Turin. "To Uldor the Accursed you belong, rather, and should seek service with Angband."
"But hear me now," he cried to them all. "These choices I give you. You must take me as your captain in Forweg's place, or else let me go. I will govern this fellowship now, or leave it. But if you wish to kill me, set to. I will fight you all until I am dead. or you. Then many men seized their weapons, and Androg cried out,
Nay, the head that he spared is not witless. If we fight, more than one will die needlessly, before we kill the best man among us.
Then he laughed,
As it was when he joined us, so it is again. He kills to make room. If it proved well before, so may it again, and he may lead us to better fortune than prowling about other men's middens.
And old Algun said, The best man among us. Time was when we would have done the same if we dared, but we have forgotten much. He may bring us home in the end.
At that, the thought came to Turin that from this small band he might rise to build himself a free lordship of his own. But he looked at Algund and Androg, and he said,
Home, do you say? Tall and cold stand the mountains of shadow between. Behind them are the people of Uldor, and about them the legions of Angband. If such things do not daunt you, 7 times 7 men, then I may lead you homewards, but how far before we die?
All were silent. Then Turin spoke again. Do you take me to be your captain? Then I will lead you first away into the wild, far from the homes of men. There we may find better fortune, or not, but at the least we shall earn less hatred of our own kind.
Then all those that were of the people of Hador gathered to him, and took him as their captain. And the others, with less goodwill, agreed. And at once he led them away out of that country.
Many messengers had been sent out by Thingol to seek Turin within Doriath and in the lands near its borders. But in the year of his flight they searched for him in vain, for none knew or could guess that he was with the outlaws and enemies of men. When winter came on they returned to the king, save Beleg only. After all others had departed, still he went on alone. But in Dimbar and along the north marches of Doriath things had gone ill. The dragon helm was seen there in battle no longer, and the strong bow also was missed. And the servants of Morgoth were heartened, and increased ever in numbers and in daring. Winter came and passed, and with spring their assault was renewed. Dimbar was overrun, and the men of Brethil were afraid, for evil roamed now upon all their borders, save in the south. It was now almost a year since Turin had fled, and still Beleg sought for him with ever-lessening hope. He passed northwards in his wanderings through the crossings of Teglin, and there, hearing ill news of a new inroad of orcs out of Taur Nufuin, he turned back and came, as it chanced, to the homes of the woodmen, soon after Turin had left that region. There he heard a strange tale that went among them. A tall and lordly man, or an elf warrior, some said, had appeared in the woods, and had slain one of the Gaurwaith, and rescued the daughter of Larnach, whom they were pursuing.
Very proud he was, said Larnach's daughter to Beleg, with bright eyes, scarcely deigned to look at me. Yet he called the wolf-men his fellows, would not slay another that stood by, and knew his name. Nathan, he called him.
Can you read this riddle? Asked Larnach of the elf.
I can, alas, said Beleg. The man that you tell of is one whom I seek. No more of Turin, did he tell the woodman, but he warned them of evil gathering northward. Soon the orcs will come ravening in this country, in strength too great for you to withstand, he said. This year, at last, you must give up your freedom or your lives. Go to Brethil while there is time.
Then Beleg went on his way in haste, and sought for the lairs of the outlaws,
and such signs as might show him whither they had gone. These he soon found. But Turin was now several days ahead, and moved swiftly, fearing the pursuit of the woodmen, and he had used all the arts that he knew to defeat or mislead any that tried to follow him. He led his men westward, away from the woodmen and from the borders of Doriath, until they came to the northern end of the great highlands that rose between the vales of Sirion and Narog. There the land was drier, and the forest ceased suddenly on the brink of a ridge. Below it could be seen the ancient south road, climbing up from the crossings of Teiglin to pass along the western feet of the moorlands on its way to Nargothrond. There for a time the outlaws lived warily, remaining seldom two nights in one camp, and leaving little trace of their going or staying. So it was that even Beleg hunted them in vain. Led by signs that he could read, or by the rumour of the passing of men among the wild things with whom he could speak, he came often near, but always their lair was deserted when he came to it, for they kept a watch about them by day and night, and at any rumour of approach they were swiftly up and away. "Alas!" he cried, "too well did I teach this child of men craft in wood and field. An elvish band, almost, one might think this to be." But they, for their part, became aware that they were trailed by some Tarris pursuer, whom they could not see, and yet could not shake off, and they grew uneasy. Not long afterwards, as Beleg had feared, the orcs came across the Brythiach, and being resisted with all the force that he could muster by Handir of Brethil, they passed south over the crossings of Teiglin in search of plunder. Many of the woodmen had taken Beleg's counsel and sent their women and children to ask for refuge in Brethil. These and their escort escaped, passing over the crossings in time, but the armed men that came behind were met by the orcs, and the men were worsted. A few fought their way through and came to Brethil, but many were slain or captured, and the orcs passed on to the homesteads and sacked them and burned them. Then at once they turned back westwards, seeking the road, for they wished now to return back north as swiftly as they could with their booty and their captives. But the scouts of the outlaws were soon aware of them, and though they cared little enough for the captives, the plunder of the woodmen aroused their greed. To Turin it seemed perilous to reveal themselves to the orcs until their numbers were known, but the outlaws would not heed him, for they had need of many things in the wild, and already some began to regret his leading. Therefore, taking one Orleg as his only companion, Turin went forth to spy upon the orcs, and giving command of the band to Undrog, he charged him to lie close and well hid while they were gone. Now the orc host was far greater than the band of outlaws, but they were in lands to which orcs had seldom dared to come, and they knew also that beyond the road lay the Talath Dirnan, the guarded plain, upon which the scouts and spies of Nargothrond kept watch, and fearing danger they were wary, and their scouts went creeping through the trees on either side of the marching lines. Thus it was that Turin and Orleg were discovered, for three scouts stumbled upon them as they lay hid, and though they slew two, the third escaped, crying as he ran, "Golog! Golog!" Now that was a name which they had for the Noldor. At once the forest was filled with orcs, scattering silently and hunting far and wide. Then Turin, seeing that there was small hope of escape, thought at least to deceive them and to lead them away from the hiding place of his men. And perceiving from the cry of "Golog!" that they feared the spies of Nargothrond, he fled with Orleg westward. The pursuit came swiftly after them, until, turn and dodge as they would,
they were driven at last out of the forest. And then they were espied, and as they sought to cross the road, Orleg was shot down by many arrows. But Turin was saved by his elven mail, and escaped alone into the wilds beyond, and by speed and craft he eluded his enemies, fleeing far into lands that were strange to him. Then the orcs, fearing that the elves of Nargothrond might be aroused, slew their captives, and made haste away into the north. Now when 3 days had passed, and yet Turin and Orleg did not return, some of the outlaws wished to depart from the cave where they lay hid, but Androg spoke against it, and while they were in the midst of this debate, suddenly a grey figure stood before them. Beleg had found them at last. He came forward with no weapon in his hands, and held the palms turned towards them. But they leapt up in fear, and Androg, coming behind, cast a noose over him, and drew it so that it pinioned his arms. "If you do not wish for guests, you should keep better watch," said Beleg. "Why do you welcome me thus? I come as a friend, and seek only a friend. Nathan, I hear that you call him."
"He's not here," said Ulrad. "But unless you have long spied on us, how know you that name?"
"He has long spied on us," said Androg. "This is the shadow that has dogged us. Now perhaps we shall learn his true purpose."
Then he bade them tie Beleg to a tree beside the cave, and when he was hard bound, hand and foot, they questioned him. But to all their questions Beleg would give one answer only. "A friend I have been to this Nathan since I first met him in the woods, and he was then but a child. I seek him only in love, and to bring him good tidings."
"Let us slay him, and be rid of his spying," said Androg in wrath,
and he looked on the great bow of Beleg and coveted it, for he was an archer. But some of better heart spoke against him, and Algund said to him, "The captain may return yet, and then you will rue it if he learns that he has been robbed at once of a friend and of good tidings."
"I do not believe the tale of this elf," said Androg. "He is a spy of the king of Doriath. But if he has indeed any tidings, he shall tell them to us, and we shall judge if they give us reason to let him live."
"I shall wait for your captain," said Beleg.
"You shall stand there until you speak," said Androg.
Then, at the egging of Androg, they left Beleg tied to the tree, without food or water, and they sat near, eating and drinking. But he said no more to them. When 2 days and nights had passed in this way, they became angry and fearful, and were eager to be gone, and most were now ready to slay the elf. As night drew down, they were all gathered about him, and Ulrad brought a brand from the little fire that was lit in the cave-mouth. But at that moment Turin returned. Coming silently, as was his custom, he stood in the shadows beyond the ring of men, and he saw the haggard face of Beleg in the light of the brand. Then he was stricken as with a shaft, and as if at the sudden melting of a frost, tears long unshed filled his eyes. He sprang out and ran to the tree. "Beleg! Beleg!" he cried. "How have you come hither, and why do you stand so?" At once he cut the bonds from his friend, and Beleg fell forward into his arms. When Turin heard all that the men would tell, he was angry and grieved, but at first he gave heed only to Beleg. While he tended him with what skill he had, he thought of his life in the woods, and his anger turned upon himself. For often strangers had been slain when caught near the lairs of the outlaws, or waylaid by them, and he had not hindered it. And often he himself had spoken ill of King Thingol and of the grey elves, so that he must share the blame if they were treated as foes. Then with bitterness he turned to the men. "You were cruel," he said, "and cruel without need. Never until now have we tormented a prisoner. But to this orc work, such a life as we lead has brought us. Lawless and fruitless all our deeds have been, serving only ourselves, and feeding hate in our hearts." But Androg said, "But whom shall we serve, if not ourselves? Whom shall we love, when all hate us? At least my hands shall not again be raised against elves or men," said Turin. "Angband has servants enough. If others will not take this vow with me, I will walk alone." Then Beleg opened his eyes and raised his head. "Not alone," he said. "Now at last I can tell my tidings. You are no outlaw, and Nathan is a name unfit. Such fault as was found in you is pardoned. For a year you have been sought to recall you to honour and to the service of the king. The dragon helm has been missed too long." But Turin showed no joy in this news, and sat long in silence, for at Beleg's words a shadow fell upon him again. "Let this night pass," he said at length, "then I will choose. However it goes, we must leave this lair tomorrow, for not all who seek us wish us well." "Nay, none," said Androg, and he cast an evil look at Beleg. In the morning, Beleg, being swiftly healed of his pains, after the manner of the elven folk of old, spoke to Turin apart. "I looked for more joy at my tidings," he said. "Surely you will return now to Doriath." And he begged Turin to do this in all ways that he could. But the more he urged it, the more Turin hung back. Nonetheless, he questioned Beleg closely concerning the judgment of Thingol. Then Beleg told him all that he knew, and at the last Turin said, "Then Mablung proved my friend, as he once seemed." "The friend of truth, rather," said Beleg, "and that was best in the end, though the doom would have been less just were it not for the witness of Nellas." Why, Turin, did you not speak of Syros's assault to Mablung? All otherwise might things have gone. And," he said, looking at the men sprawled near the mouth of the cave, "you might have held your helm still high, and not fallen to this." "That may be, if fall you call it," said Turin. "That may be. But so it went, and words stuck in my throat." There was reproof in his eyes, without question asked of me, for a deed I had not done. My man's heart was proud, as the elf king said. And so it still is, Beleg Cuthalion. Not yet will it suffer me to go back to Menegroth and bear looks of pity and pardon, as for a wayward boy amended. I should give pardon, not receive it. And I am a boy no longer, but a man according to my kind, and a hard man by my fate. Then Beleg was troubled. "What will you do then?" he asked. "Fair free," said Turin. "That wish Mablung gave me at our parting. The grace of Thingol will not stretch to receive these companions of my fall, I think. But I will not part with them now, if they do not wish to part with me. I love them in my way, even the worst, a little. They are of my own kind, and there is some good in each that might grow. I think that they will stand by me." "You see with other eyes than mine," said Beleg. "If you try to wean them from evil, they will fail you. I doubt them, and one most of all." "How shall an elf judge of men?" said Turin. "As he judges of all deeds, by whomsoever done," answered Beleg. But he said no more, and did not speak of Androg's malice, to which his evil handling had been chiefly due, for perceiving Turin's mood, he feared to be disbelieved and to hurt their old friendship, driving Turin back to his evil ways. "Fare free, you say, Turin, my friend," he said. "What is your meaning?" "I would lead my own men and make war in my own way," Turin answered. "But in this at least my heart is changed. I repent every stroke, save those dealt against the enemy of men and elves. And above all else, I would have you beside me. Stay with me." "If I stayed beside you, love would lead me, not wisdom," said Beleg. "My heart warns me that we should return to Doriath. Elsewhere a shadow lies before us." "Nonetheless, I will not go there," said Turin. "Alas," said Beleg, "but as a fond father who grants his son's desire against his own foresight, I yield to your will. At your asking, I will stay." "That is well indeed," said Turin. Then all at once he fell silent, as if he himself were aware of the shadow, and strove with his pride, which would not let him turn back. For a long while he sat, brooding on the years that lay behind. Coming suddenly out of thought, he looked at Beleg and said, "The elf maiden that you named, though I forget how, I owe her well for her timely witness, yet I cannot recall her. Why did she watch my ways?" Then Beleg looked strangely at him. "Why, indeed," he said, "Turin, have you lived always with your heart and half your mind far away? As a boy, you used to walk with Nellas in the woods." "That must have been long ago," said Turin, "or so my childhood now seems, and a mist is over it, save only the memory of my father's house in Dor Lomin. Why would I walk with an elf maiden?" "To learn what she could teach, maybe," said Beleg. "If no more than a few elven words of the names of woodland flowers? Their names at least you have not forgotten. Alas, child of men, there are other griefs in Middle-earth than yours, and wounds made by no weapon. Indeed, I begin to think that elves and men should not meet or meddle." Turin said nothing, but looked long in Beleg's face, as if he would read in it the riddle of his words. "Nellas of Doriath never saw him again, and his shadow passed from her." Now Beleg and Turin turned to other matters, debating where they should dwell. "Let us return to Dimbar on the North Marches, where once we walked together," said Beleg eagerly. "We are needed there. For of late the orcs have found a way down out of Tar Nufuin, making a road through the pass of Anach." "I do not remember it," said Turin. "No, we never went so far from the borders," said Beleg. "But you have seen the peaks of the Krisaigrim far off, and to their east the dark walls of the Gorgoroth. Anach lies between them, above the high springs of Mindeb. A hard and dangerous way, and yet many come by it now, and Dimbar, which used to lie in peace, is falling under the dark hand, and the men of Brithil are troubled. To Dimbar I call you." "Nay, I will not walk backward in life," said Turin, "nor can I come easily to Dimbar now. Sirion lies between, unbridged and unforded below the Brithiach, far northward. It is perilous to cross, save in Doriath. But I will not pass into Doriath and make use of Thingol's leave and pardon." "A hard man you have called yourself, Turin, truly, if by that you meant stubborn. Now the turn is mine.
I will go by your leave, as soon as I may, and bid you farewell. If you wish indeed to have the strong bow beside you, look for me in Dimbar. At that time, Turin said no more. The next day, Beleg set out, and Turin went with him a bowshot from the camp, but said nothing. "Is it farewell, then, son of Húrin?" said Beleg. "If you wish indeed to keep your word and stay beside me," answered Turin, "then look for me on Amon Rúil." Thus he spoke, being fey, and unwitting of what lay before him. "Else this is our last farewell." "Maybe that is best," said Beleg, and went his way. It is said that Beleg went back to Menegroth, and came before Thingol and Melian, and told them of all that had happened, save only his evil handling by Turin's companions. Then Thingol sighed, and he said, "I took up the fathering of the son of Húrin, and that cannot be laid down for love or hate, unless Húrin the Valiant himself should return. What more would he have me do?" But Melian said, "A gift you shall now have of me, Cuthalion, for your help and your honour, for I have none worthier to give." And she gave him a store of lembas, the waybread of the elves, wrapped in leaves of silver, and the threads that bound it were sealed at the knots with the seal of the queen, a wafer of white wax shaped as a single flower of Telperion. For according to the customs of the Eldalier, the keeping and the giving of this food belonged to the queen alone. "This waybread, Beleg," she said, "shall be your help in the wild and the winter, and the help also of those whom you choose. For I commit this now to you, to apportion as you will, in my stead." In nothing did Melian show greater favour to Turin than in this gift. For the Eldar had never before allowed men to use this waybread, and seldom did so again. Then Beleg departed from Menegroth, and went back to the north marches, where he had his lodges and many friends. But when winter came and war was stilled, suddenly his companions missed Beleg, and he returned to them no more. Chapter 7 of Mim the Dwarf. Now the tale turns to Mim the Petty Dwarf. The petty dwarves are long out of mind, for Mim was the last. Little was known of them, even in days of old. The Nibin Nogrim, the elves of Beleriand, called them long ago. But they did not love them. And the petty dwarves loved none but themselves. If they hated and feared the orcs, they hated also the Eldar, and the exiles most of all, for the Noldor, they said, had stolen their lands and their homes. Nargothrond was first found, and its delving